I truly see our function as HR leader as truly as that innovation lab. And I see it as an opportunity for us to continue to innovate our culture. AI should be spread throughout, because that's the only way you're going to be welcoming the change, be part of the change, and truly co-create it together with your people.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Now today, it is my pleasure to welcome Diana Valor, Chief Human Resource Officer at Travel Brands, where she leads people strategy across the HIS group of companies. Diana joined the company just before a major transformation, post-acquisition, mid-pandemic, and with no HR systems in place. In just a few years, she has helped shape a new cultural vision for the organization, rolled out full-scale HR programs, and earned the organization a place in the Great Place to Work certification. So she is guiding the organization's approach to AI as both a policy leader and a strategic partner to the entire business. So very excited to have this conversation today. Diana, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Thomas. Very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So could you start with telling us a little bit about your background, especially about M&A, because I think that's there's some unique angles, right, to organizational evolution that you have had access to over your career.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll start a bit with the history. I started back in 2019 with the companies, and exactly the very first year when our company had been purchased by HIS Japan. So it was in the midst, as you can imagine, of the purchase and acquisition, and they purchased us as a company within the travel industry, as well as another organization, Johnview, together with also with some colleges that are also in the educational field. So as you can imagine, the merger and acquisition journey has been quite interesting. Luckily, I had been headhunted for the role given my merger and acquisitions background. So you're absolutely right. It did start in a challenging times when I was just like in the midst of the aftermath after the acquisition just happened when my role began.
So tell me about just your broader background. So before this particular organization, you said you had an M&A kind of background. Would you just tell us a little bit about that? Because I think that can help color the rest of the conversation.
So I was actually leading seven different organizations under the same kind of company, Clear Summit Group. And then I was the one leading, being the VP of HR for all these seven organizations, directly influencing being part of the shared services. I was the very first pioneer who started the shared HR services for that organization where it all started. So I had experience of making sure that whenever you tap into and multiple companies come together, the culture becomes unified. And then you have that one culture, one employee experience. That was my experience when I got into Travel Brands.
That's amazing, because the idea of having multiple brands under one roof and having a shared service while still and ensuring that there are different cultures, or you know, something that's unique to each of the brands, or some like unique challenges associated with that, which we will bring to the future as we talk about the current day and AI and how transformations are happening next. But first, let's talk a little bit about this. A unique journey, right? Because we're talking about acquisitions that led into a pandemic in an industry which was dramatically, as we know, travel was impacted by the pandemic, and within a context of an organization that needed significant maturing on the HR front, right? So could you just tell us a little bit about that journey? Because that kind of transformation might be the ones that we're setting ourselves up for across the board with the next era that we're all spinning into. But let's spend some time talking about that massive transformation and over those multiple years.
So of course, happy to share. So I still remember my very first day when I stepped into the organization, and I knew that there were multiple other HR leaders before me, but I also knew that I'm the very first one after the acquisition in Japan just happened. So of course, the thought process was like, how can we do this, right? How can we actually engage the culture? Where do you even start? And I can tell you the pivotal point for me was truly having one-on-ones with every single team member of the organization. Because within the very first week, I had an opportunity to meet with the CEO. And my humble opinion was, we have been just purchasing over Japan. We are right now one company. So what about having one company, one vision, one employee experience? But where do we start? And that's how I started having one-on-one significant conversations with every single team member from our company, literally from top to bottom. And I asked them three simple questions, very consistent. What's working now? What's not working? And how can I improve? And I can tell you, I got from, oh my goodness, why is HR talking to me? Oh my God, am I getting fired? I'm here to talk. Yes, I'm here to share. And it all started with that genuine care and attention for every single employee experience. I listened with empathy, and this is the best way that I can actually hear that employee voice. And I understood that through merger acquisition, it wasn't the structure with the compliance that we needed, but it was the people belonging that we needed to tackle. And that's how the culture journey began. So we started slowly but surely. I can tell you proudly, when I started, there was only one sick day policy, and the people are just like getting the paycheck, and that was it. And I went to the CEO and I told him, can we please have regular other companies have 5 days, maybe three? And I started with 3 sick days in my very first week when I started the organization. I can tell you, the people felt there would be some change, but they were still uncertain. They still didn't know exactly what was about to happen. So it took a lot of effort to make sure you truly listen to them, you truly understand what their needs are, and more importantly, to give them a voice within our culture. And that makes significant strides. And then following that, we started putting the strategy together. The same onboarding system, the same HR system. We started unifying HR system to make sure we have everything done. And the plan was ready. And then 2020 came with COVID, and then everything stopped. The clock literally worked for us, especially in travel, when we had to literally send everybody home. And I remember staying in a boardroom with the chief IT officer and just like thinking, what do we do right now? We have to send everybody home, send computer, send laptops, make everything.
Yeah, of course. Please.
Could I just interrupt? So I know that's going to be this whole next phase. Before we get to 2020,
yeah,
you were talking about integrating multiple brands into one culture and one employee experience, what systems, process, and there's also a cultural element because we're talking about international organization, M&A. So was the idea that there would be one holistic employee experience and HR processes and shared service across the organization, or was there already a vision for some differentiation? Because that's something that in M&A that you always think about, right? So how did you think about that in terms of, and let's say pre-pandemic, so we're just talking about a classic.
Pre-pandemic, you know, yes.
The plan got ripped up. What did that work?
What that looked like. So yeah, we're thinking holistically to bring all the travel organization under the same type of strategy, because it was the only way that we can actually embed the Japan culture and making sure we're actually communicating with them and echoing what they had while still customizing it for Canada. Because ultimately, you all know, in Asian countries, the culture is totally different than ours, right? And we had to obviously, of course, customize it for ours. But the overall goal was throughout all the HIS companies, all the companies that had been purchased by HIS Japan, to have that unified employee experience. And that's why this was a moment, also 2019, when I got selected to be on the board exactly for that, to think about that unified strategy and create it.
And that's amazing. Love to see HR professionals getting board level impact opportunities. But then practically on the ground in terms of implementation of such a strategy, and maybe it changed dramatically. I'm excited to hear what comes next. But how much of the HR organization, right, was centralized versus, country specific, for example, or just a functional organization specific?
So we had the departments being still unique in their own ways. However, myself being on the board, we could actually start creating the strategy to be high level. So we took the steps first, thinking and creating the strategy to be across the organization, and then working with every single organization to spread that. So what did that look is really sharing the best practices and making sure we all tap into the overall high-level strategic HR.
So there's like centers of excellence that might be like a shared service delivery model, but like HRBP or operations teams might be decentralized and localized.
Correct. So that brought another level of complexity, as you can imagine, because the other companies they have their own culture. So how can you ensure that you earn the trust and literally speak the same cultural language with everybody? So it took efforts and at the same time, I would say continuous work for the organization to make sure they truly understand why the culture had to be adjusted, therefore, given the acquisition. And more importantly, it's ultimately for the benefit of our most important assets for other people.
Of course. And that's why you spent all this time doing individual interviews and getting to the point of creating this master plan. But then let's talk about agility. And I want to hear, okay, there was this thing that happened in 2020. And how did that change your process?
Yeah, so all the process was ready, theoretically. Everything was ready to go. And 2020 came, so I think I started sharing with that we had to send the people home. And of course, we had to put a lot of people on temporary and even permanent layoffs because travel stopped literally. So we had to do what we had to do, unfortunately. But in my mind, the culture cannot be stopped. The people's voice cannot be stopped. We have to continue to be open and transparent to them. And what we did, I can probably share, Thomas, our initiative was creating a Facebook group with all our team members that have been on layoffs and temporarily without any jobs, of course, given the pandemic situation. And we created a Facebook group. And we literally created videos with all our executives on a weekly basis, telling them, this is the situation, this is what we know right now, or we have the answer here, or we don't have the answer here, just to keep them informed. And we are very authentic and genuine about our answers. And we did that intentionally to make sure we keep the engagement going, because we knew that otherwise, the culture is going to be disrupted. It started already with new acquisition, new culture, new strategy, then the pandemic, which was, of course, a worldwide big deal for us. So we had to make sure that the people are aware that we'll continue to communicate and we'll continue to keep our promises, of course, given the parameters that were there. So we had to just change the equations having different variables. And this was the pandemic that was basically influencing their lives. And we continue to inform them. We'll continue to have communications. Here is what we know. And we continue to actually do confidential surveys, Thomas, believe it or not, even if they were no longer working, just to check on them. And the questions had been,
wow,
how are you feeling? How are you dealing with the pandemic? How is your family dealing with the pandemic? And is there anything we can do? And I can probably share, even our very own CEO actually donated money for Christmas for the people that had no longer been employed with us at that time, just for them to make sure that they feel supported by organizations in times of crisis like that. So we did lots of intentional meetings and strategic videos and communication and Facebook pages and commentaries. Myself and the HR team, although obviously, as you can imagine, are also highly paid given the pandemic, we took an effort and we made sure to respond to every single communication that we had and just like listening to the people. And believe it or not, we did the integration of our new HR system, which is actually UKG, in 2021 during the pandemic. I had people working one day per week, half a day per week, all the other. So rather than having the implementation done within 6 months, we did it within 1 year. But we knew we were going to be doing it right because we had to commit to what we promised our people. And that's how we earned the trust and how they made sure that HR is truly for them, is not only the policymaker, but is truly the culture builder and the trust owner.
Wow. So there's multiple ways that you're signaling as a leadership team to your employee base and ex-employee base or part-time employee base or partial or hopefully temporarily ex-employee base that you're here and you're still going to be here tomorrow. For example, by continuing to invest in longer term projects, even if it's at a slower pace. But then the things that your team did with communicating with folks who are no longer, you know, part of the company, it feels like a step or two beyond. So you didn't have to do that, right? That you could have said, this is where our corporate responsibility ends with our employees, right? And there's enough to do there and just to make sure that our customers are, the company's fiscally solvent, that our customers are helped as much as we can. What was the impetus for the board and the executive team to have those initiatives where you're communicating and being extremely transparent? I would say in a way that in normal times, maybe companies aren't even with their current employees, right? That you were with temporarily laid off folks. So what were the discussions like internally that led to that decision? Because I think it's pretty extraordinary.
Thank you. Thank you kindly, Thomas. And I can tell you, there was hesitation at first. They were all hesitant. Why now? Should we do it? Should we not do it? How can we best communicate? And I can proudly tell you the fact that I think throughout all the actions, I could earn the trust and tell them that, yes, people are the most important valuable assets. We have to lead with love. We have to lead with care. We have to lead with empathy. I truly believe all the leaders starting thinking, you're absolutely right. We have to do this because this wasn't done before. So even if they are a bit hesitant, I would say at first, they bought in afterwards. And then when they realized and when they saw the fruits of our labor and they saw the kind feedback we received, and people actually, exactly like you said, no other companies is doing that. You don't have to do that. That's amazing. Thank you for responding. Thank you for taking care of me. They felt the gratitude. And I think that was the moment when our shift and paradigm changed towards a more people-led approach, like making sure we have them, we have the individuals, and we're basically there for the people. And I can probably tell you, it got from, should we do this, to let's do it full force and look at the results. And right now, every time when you have a new initiative, we are wholeheartedly, of course, we evaluate the pros and cons. Of course, I build business cases for everything. But the trust is being earned because we see the results in people, Thomas. And we see that we have the performance in them and we see the light in their eyes because they feel appreciated, they feel valued, they feel heard, they feel loved.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. So I imagine the feedback loop was all qualitative like that right away. You probably feel, yes. Oh, wow, this is different. This is okay. So thank you for staying in touch with us, and I can come back and I can see whether I will or when I might have a job back or what else is going on in this organization, so I can still be affiliated with it. And so there's that instant feedback, which might feel good, especially in a time of crisis. But then after some time, there was also business impact as feedback, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're traveling again. You and I were just talking about our summer travel plans, right? So the whole world is back. We're in 2025, but I don't know, maybe by 22, it started like coming back up. So when was it that it kind of shifted from, you know, these qualitative pieces of feedback to, it's almost like bulletproof, like this cultural shift or this approach to leadership and communication is having a significant business impact on the company?
Absolutely right. Yeah, I would say it did start with qualitative and then we started with the quantitative in 2022 towards the 2023. That was the year we also implemented our HR system. So we had even more leverage. We could actually see through the reporting. We could see retention results. We could see the attrition that we are noticing. And I can tell you, Thomas, the entire employee life cycle changed, but we did a lot of work intentionally. So apart from just like having one in our system, we changed the onboarding processes. So it was just like a simple welcome to our company. We started creating a new boarding pass to mimic the travel when you go on a plane. So it's like boarding, welcome Thomas, this is your first day. This is what you're going to be doing the very first week. This is what your leader is going to be showing you. That's your job shadowing. That's your orientation, right? We started doing that. Then afterwards, within the recruitment, we're very intentional. We started partnering with colleges, universities, telling them who we are. So we started putting our companies on the map to tell them why are we unique as an organization, because we started offering different things. So we wanted to make sure that people are starting recognizing that. Then more importantly, we're starting doing strategic goals. Why are you in the role that you are because of XYZ? How is your role being impacted by our company strategy? And more importantly, how can you actually contribute to make this company better and higher? So we started putting literally deliverables like KPIs, goals, measurements. We started checking even within the probation period. We started doing regular check-ins with the people. How is the onboarding feeling? Is your manager supporting you? And multiple surveys, Thomas. I can tell you we did a lot of employee check-ins to make sure that we are doing the right things. So we tackled the entire employee life cycle from onboarding to continue to learning. We put education policies in place that were not existing before, basically saying the company will pay for your studies and your courses as long as they are relevant to your job, in order for the people to understand how relevant education is. I personally, together with my amazing team, we led multiple learning and education series on dealing with people, mastering how important it is, working in a virtual world, because ultimately we didn't know, we didn't have a recipe, the same how we don't have right now for AI, right? There is no recipe for success, so we have to adapt, right? So we did learning and development, performance management. We put new problems for succession planning, lots of other problems for total rewards. Of course, we also had like a recognition program. We delivered thank you cards. I can tell you about multiple issues from onboarding to offboarding. Because including the exit, you have to do it right. So I can proudly tell you, the entire HR team got trained to lead the terminations whenever we had to do them with empathy. And we put together now placement internet service to help the people following their exit, because ultimately they have to continue with us. And we call it the career progression journey. So in other words, we help them with their resume, post-employment with us, because it wasn't our fault that COVID happened, but we had to support them. We helped them networking. We helped them creating the new job opportunity. And they felt all supported. And if somebody, let's say, is retiring, we do a retirement party for them. We diversify the anniversary certificates, because before they're getting $100 for 10 years. We change it. Right now, somebody with 10 years, they get a travel certificate for $1,000 they can spend together with their family. So we change the value, we change the benefits, we change the wellness, the well-being, mental health, and multiple attitudes. So by tackling the entire employee life cycle from onboarding to offboarding and showing the people that we truly care for them, we knew that was the moment at the end of 2022. I knew that the next year we'll be ready for Great Place to Work. Because I knew that survey is going to be really, of course, it's on a global basis. It's also totally third party done. So you had to make sure that you check all the boxes, because ultimately you don't know what the people will say. But we knew that after all the initiatives and the feedback we got, we'll be ready to build the next level of excellence, which was a great place to work that we are in 2023 and then last year in 2024. And I'm hopefully we'll continue to grow. And our speaking of numbers, we got 86% satisfaction rate on that, which was an amazing. And the NPS score was 23% increase. So it's really good to see.
That's amazing. And it's hard to do at this kind of scale and with this kind of set of changes, with M&A being a piece of it, right? So I love this story because you already hinted at it, but I wanted to go through this in detail because it talks about this multi-year transformation, right? With big plans, but then a moment of crisis, which we've all faced, but in this case, it was accelerated almost because you're in the midst of an M&A journey, right? And there's all these things that are getting redefined, but it seemed to have elevated, at least changed, I would argue, elevated the executive team's posture and response to how you relate to the employee base, right? And so that has been something that you've kept and accelerated past the pandemic, and it's led to business results, right? But the highest level takeaway that I wanted to use to pivot into this next set of questions I have for you is, you have now reacted as a leadership team and as an organization to a pretty, seismic shift, right? Let's call it, or a big shock, like, to the system, and come out stronger, arguably created an anti-fragile system. So, and then you evolved all these different aspects of what you do from your programming standpoint going forward. So let's meet the moment and look ahead now a little bit, right? So in practically every industry, and certainly within HR professionals, and that's what we really like to uncover, is how are people thinking about this next seismic shift that seems to be happening to some degree or varying degrees, depending on what industry you're in, exactly what you're doing, with the advent of AI. So I wonder, first of all, like, what are your reflections on, like, the organization's readiness to, you know, just take on whatever comes, but in this case, the next set of changes, right, which will be around how this latest technology could be a big shock or have a big impact on how we all do work.
Yeah, that's a great question, Thomas. And I think the same way with how the pandemic was, AI had been existing for some time and nobody had a recipe for success for sure. But I truly see our function as HR leaders, truly as that innovation lab. And I see it as an opportunity for us to continue to innovate our culture. AI should be spread throughout, because that's the only way you're going to be welcoming the change, be part of the change, and truly co-create it together with your people. So the way we do it in our organization, because of course, being governed by Japan, we have our governance and we have to be very careful about our policies and everything. So whenever there is something new like this occurs, we have to put the certain policies in place. But on the other hand, it's about how do you experiment this change? So give the people the opportunity. We are truly big on this. And we basically took an intentional decision to inform the people, let's see what AI is, experiment the AI the way it is, within, of course, the certain parameters and by following the policy of the organization, meaning, of course, without sharing the proprietary information, making sure the governance is there, but do experiment. So let's say a simple example, that in Microsoft Teams, you have Copilot or ChatGPT or all the others. Let's be honest, one HR generalist will put a job description together, maybe, let's say, 5-10 minutes, an experienced one, ChatGPT, or give it to you in a couple of seconds.
So again, do you take that for good or do you actually reflect? So the way we see it is embrace the change, embrace the innovation, embrace the newness that AI is bringing, embrace the speed, because ultimately it's offering us speed, agility, but then filter that information, use that human intelligence and strategic mind to really see what can be truly good for our organization. So I see it really as an opportunity for the future. We definitely have to use it. We are using it actually with chatbots, of course, with our travel consultants when they respond to questions and all that. And I'm sure multiple other industries are using it. So let's say within our own share services to create strategies, to get yourself inspired about what's working, but then filter that information down. I really think, does it really work for our company? Is it really good for our team? Is it really good for my project? So we have to have that human touch, if you will, to make sure the AI is truly customized solution for what we need. Because that's very important, but definitely embrace the change. I see it really as an amazing opportunity. On our executive table, we speak about this all the time. So every time when the chief technical officer is like, what is new? We are all ears and eyes, and how can we do it? So I see it truly as the entire executive team partnering. And the same how I always say culture is the responsibility of everybody, I say the same for AI. It's really our responsibility to implement the change, because ultimately, if you think about it, the people will start experimenting on their own. So we have to lead that change before they might put some information down that we were knowing. So it's very important to embrace the change, embrace the new things right away, and then communicate to people accordingly. And we did that within our town halls, all our communications on our intranet, on our communication emails, and so on and so forth, and making sure they are truly aware. Yes, AI is here. Let's embrace it. However, let's make sure that we are following the policy. And then we worked with the leaders. So from the executive team, was getting out to our directors and managers and telling them, get your teams to explore it, explore the innovation, but of course within the certain parameters of limitations. But definitely, I'd see it as an amazing, amazing opportunity ahead. I think, you know, some of our, you know, roles, if you will, can be simply strategized using AI, not necessarily maybe to make them disappear, but definitely support and aid and reduce all that admin work and make us more safe.
Absolutely. Okay, I want to get back into that in a second about how the HR function could change a little bit. But before that, let's talk about the organization more broadly, because that's what you're talking about, how there's a co-creation of a strategy with the broader executive team. Yeah. Now, I wonder, it's different to different degrees in depending on the context of the industry you're in. But to some degree, everyone's reading headlines about how, you know, jobs are going to change, or my job might not be the same, or maybe I won't have one tomorrow. And there's some implicit kind of fear, right? And I was thinking back to the COVID times, the conversation we were just having, right, of people having to be furloughed and part-time and all these kind of things, and that could be dynamic, and it leads to this almost like crisis. I don't think it's exactly that. And maybe there are lessons in what you did on the COVID side, but how do you communicate empathetically to the organization about the changes that may come to their job, your job, all jobs, and how everything like would work? You mentioned like in a travel industry or in any industry, how customer service is happening is rapidly changing. So many different aspects, right? So what is the role of HR in that communication?
I see ourselves as truly the catalyst of communication, because ultimately they look upon us ideally to support them, right, in times of change, but also they look upon us to also guide them of what's about to happen. So truly, I see ourselves as really communicating openly with an open heart and genuinely and authentically. So not telling them, oh, nothing will happen, and then 2 weeks later, their termination is happening. We have to be very authentic. And the way we have done it successfully throughout our organization, I'm very proud about our current CEO doing exactly the same thing. We have open town halls and we tell the people, this is the state of the organization, and then we are truly intentional. If there will be potential changes, let's say restructuring happening, we tell them, this is how the organization is doing. We might be having to have some changes happening within certain departments, and we'll definitely, of course, communicate that to you. So we are open about the intention, so the people don't expect surprises. And then secondly, when the actual terminations happen, we truly speak with the leaders and we coach them. So I personally did, together with my team, multiple sessions with the leaders, explain to them when the restructuring happened. How is the termination going to be happening? How are we going to be handling? What is their role? What is our role as HR? How are we going to be following up with them? And how important the empathy and the love is. And we truly role played it to make sure they felt comfortable with it, to make sure that people felt heard and they truly, truly felt supported. Because ultimately, they will feel the energy. They will know right away if it's just like be a number or they truly care for them. And I can tell you, in every single termination meeting, what we do, whenever that happens, because ultimately, of course, businesses do go through restructuring. We are dealing empathetically. We are dealing with the heart, telling them exactly, we're truly sorry this is happening to you. Here is the package. Here is the information. I'm here to support you. And when they feel supported and they feel that they are supported post-termination, that's when their journey happens. And I can tell you, Thomas, we got lots of individuals, unfortunately, from tears to smiles, because in the end, they felt they were truly supported. They felt truly so the organizations, and they spoke so highly about us, ultimately. So it's truly the same, speaking the same cultural language, dealing with the people on a very consistent manner, showing them that you truly care, and communicating changes, even if they're not necessarily what they're expecting. But it's important to communicate that change openly.
Love that. So then let's move to the HR function itself then.
Yeah.
You already kind of talked about a couple of things about like job description writing, for example. What are ways that you, your peers, what are the key use cases that you're starting to see emerge within the world of HR as a function itself? Because ultimately, if the function can play that role to be educator and helping with reskilling and communicating about the shifts coming, you want to be fluent in it to some degree yourself, right? So what are you seeing coming out in the early days for as use cases for the function?
For the function, I would say we have to get into, of course, learning exactly how to use AI, if that's a way to say. There is no manual per se, but for sure, become comfortable in using it and truly use it as a research and development type of tool, but also understanding that it can so eliminate all the administrative work. And I would say us as HR leaders should be extremely open with our teams and say, look, I know your role is HR administrator or HR coordinator. However, let's see how you can do better using AI. And then maybe your skill set, so upskill and reskill the people, can be better for, let's say, a talent acquisition role or a generalist role or, you know, a succession planning type of individual. So you basically start looking at the roles and, again, be authentic and be intentional about that and see, if this type of roles and functions can be replaced by AI, then what? Do you replace that person or do you reskill or upskill that individual? And it's a business decision that the company needs to make. So it's truly, I think, an equation. I see us as truly being the innovators in that aspect, meaning do enough research, truly understand as much as you can, learn what the other companies are doing, learn what other global organizations are doing, and truly see and be proactive and intentional about moving one step ahead, if you will. I think Gretzky was the one saying, you know what, you don't need to know where the puck is. You always have to prevent and think where the puck will be, right? Where the puck is going to be. That's the same. You have to always think, okay, AI is here right now. Okay, great, it can do a job description. But I think strategically, we have to forecast where AI is going to be. And if we predict that it's going to be replacing a certain function, then what are the actions that we take in order for us to either upskill that particular function, remove it, or what is the next step that the company is going to be doing? And I think those can be the discussion the HR leadership table should always have, just a listing ahead.
So let's push on that a bit further. So let's assume that all that there'll be a transition and it'll take time. But I love the way you're thinking about it. If it can do this today, how is it going to evolve? But generally speaking, administrative tasks should be coming out, which historically, if you go back to the function, you know, multiple decades ago, that's how it all started, right? Just processing benefits, administering leave, making sure that the, you know, T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And that was the function. And then we moved into human resources after we got past all that, even as a concept. And now we've been talking about people and the employee experience. But there's a lot of that administrative work that very much remains. So let's assume that's slowly but surely going away. How do you imagine, if you're future-proofing your HR organization, how do you do that effectively?
That's a very good question. I would say it's about doing the proper planning. So that's called organizational planning in the organization, basically looking not only at the org chart, but looking at the business need. So looking truly what a strategic vision is for the organization, what are the strategic objectives that we have to meet, and then what are the people that you need? And then if we feel that some of these things can be automated, okay, then how do you reshift? So I'd see it truly as creating two maps, the org chart we have today, the org chart of tomorrow, and what are we going to be doing in order for us to meet tomorrow's needs. So that's the best way to do. So do it strategically, have an open conversation with the executive team and truly thinking, okay, we want to meet X objective, we want to be the best travel company, let's say in our case in Canada, What are the objectives? What are the deliverables? What can we do? Okay, how can AI help? And in that case, how is the org chart going to be changing? How is the technology map going to be changing? How is the department going to be changing? Because ultimately, commerce is not only about the people, it's also about technological platforms you have to invest in, right? It's also the other departments. So let's say somebody in marketing, maybe they are just like creating content that can be generated by AI. Great, amazing. So do you really need that role? Or are you often moving that role away? So it's truly creating two strategic maps and thinking ahead and working towards that. And then making sure that, you know, whatever the org chart is or will be, you start communicating. And I would say communicate in advance. The more important thing that a company can do is truly be honest and genuine about that. We are going to be making changes, and this is our vision. And then the leader of the actual department where the changes are going to be happening, coming to them. We are going to be embracing AI. This is how it's going to be. And helping them shift. Because you never know. Sometimes you may be surprised. Somebody who might be doing an admin or whatever, like, actually, I know how to do X, Y, Z. I might know how to do a bit of technical support, saying anything, let's say. And maybe they are just like doing right now a certain admin where I've said it's fantastic. So maybe they can support. Because let's not forget, the people that are already in the organization are the people that know the company, know the industry, know the culture. And especially an attitude, if an ability and a skill can be trained, an attitude cannot. Right. And I'm personally very big on 3 A's. Every time when you hire somebody, I always say the attitude is number one. The ability to do things is number two. And then the aptitude, in order for them to learn something new, is number three. But remember the attitude. If they do have the right approach, they are going to be learning everything. They're going to be embracing the AI. They're going to be doing it. But if they wouldn't be capable to do so, then it's when the time, when that organization, charm, maybe that individual should be, you know, placed away.
Yeah, and by communicating the vision for this shift that it's happening transparently, you're giving time for people with the 3 A's to react to that, respond to that, and not even just surprise, but actually you might expect that people are coming into these new roles and they're defining almost bottom up as much as top down how the roles and the work is going to shift over time.
Going to affect them, exactly. And you might be surprised, but sometimes attrition happens naturally. When the people are communicated with openness, and they understand that maybe their role is on their own, sometimes they might just come and say, hey, can I do this? Or maybe I should do something else. Or maybe they're just like resigning because they realize that, you know, ultimately there will be a role for them tomorrow. But it's all about the open communication and how you are transitioning that communication throughout.
And for the right people, hopefully for most of the people, like you mentioned, there's a significant advantage to knowing the company, the culture, the industry. And then we're just talking about continuing to like evolve your skills what's new on top of that. I want to go back to one point that you made earlier, which is a tension that I think a lot of HR teams ultimately kind of wrestle with, and I think you do as well, which is about compliance, right? So this feeling that, hey, ultimately we are protecting the company. We want to be careful, right, with anything that like we're doing. And of course, there are, you know, there's new case law, whether it's with IP or employment law, litigation that's happening, and of course, with international business like yours, it's even more complex based on where customers are and also your employees are. So often the reaction is, okay, let's just throw our hands up and stop everything, right? Your answer is a bit more nuanced than that, but help me understand how you think about that. The trade-offs, right, between a compliance mindset and an innovation mindset, or how can the two coexist?
That's a great question. So I will say this, as HR professionals, of course, we are the policymakers, but we have to transform, right, our role and perception to become that cultural catalyst, right? So the way we do it and the way, in my humble opinion, it should be done, number one, yes, there are the policies. We have to meet always the legal policies from the federal perspective, the state perspective, the provincial perspective. The law is the law, so to speak. So we have to make sure we meet that. So put those policies in place. So legally, let's say you must have this XYZ policies and making sure you know what to do for us in, of course, when onboarding and on an annual basis, all our employees sign off on our company policies. So that's number one. You have to create a policy. So coming back to AI, whenever something new comes, and obviously, of course, the corporate governance is essential in this case, we make sure that we communicate that corporate governance policy to everybody. We make sure that every single person knows the code of ethics. And I can tell you, Thomas, the best way to communicate is not just by simply sending an email asking them to sign. Do a session. That's what we do. We do a session led by the HR team and we work the people. And we always, of course, make them laugh and we tell them, we know this might be a bit boring because I know policy might be boring, but let's make sure we all understand what we have to sign and why. So explaining why, they will really understand why it is. So start the policy, explain the why this is needed, make sure the corporate governance is properly known and well spread throughout the organization, making sure the code of ethics is well known. And then when it's about AI, show and explain and communicate and make them sign the guidelines to make sure that the AI is properly used in such a way that the company is being protected. Especially for us, we are belonging to a public company. There are certain regulations we have to fill. So that's very important. We always communicate and making sure every single employee is aware, they know, they understand, and if they have questions, they can come to us or IT. And that's very important. So have all the policies signed, making sure everybody's aware, have all the information probably spread out. That's the best way to communicate on this. And that's the best way to link to your point that former policy holder, so to speak, because yes, we have to check the marks legally and compliance-wise, to yes, we are still for you. We are still the cultural, we are basically the catalyst here. We are still here showing you the love and the empathy you need, but we also have to be also making sure that you are feeling the compliance and you are signing the policy and you truly understand. And if you do it in through open communication, through the proper venue, so we have lots of policies in our case via our intranet and SharePoint and all that, through multiple means of communication, not only once, the people will understand and they will come with open conversations. I can probably tell you they will feel they have a voice and they will feel that they are totally being opened up by anything, which is really essential and important, right? Because ultimately their voice needs to be heard. Yes, they know we'll follow up because we're also firm about that, but they also know that if they do have questions, we are the ones being answering that. So that's the only way you can actually marry the two, right? Being the compliance holder and the cultural catalyst and leading with love and empathy.
It's a tough balancing act. So
it's for sure.
If you look ahead then, Diana, as we close out here, what advice would you have for your peers, friends, HR leaders out there who are looking to prepare for the next wave of disruption?
I would say the first one, lead with curiosity. We never have instructions for all the new things coming up. COVID is an example, AI is an example. By asking questions, you're going to be discovering multiple answers. So definitely have that curiosity mindset. Second one that I would say, build with the people, not only for the people. Have that co-creation mentality, because when you get the people involved in any new project, they all feel that they contribute, they all feel that they have a meaning, they all feel that they have a purpose, and they'll contribute feeling very good about that and having a big impact on the organization. And last but not least, I would say, think like a strategist and act like a cultural carrier. So think strategy, think compliance, but act with the culture in mind and make sure that we are the architects of the culture, if you think about it. We are the architects of the people engagement and everything they feel in the organization. So making sure that whenever they feel that beat is really strong and hard and they truly know that we are there for them and they all feel supported.
Thank you for sharing that. So how can people connect with you, Dan, if they want to follow your work or your thinking or just connect with you in general after this conversation? Is LinkedIn a good place?
And LinkedIn is a fantastic place for sure. If you just like Google Diana Valler, spelled V-A-L-L-E-R, I'm sure you'll find me and happy to connect with any HR leaders and happy, you know, to learn from the peers. I think learning should always continue. So cannot wait to learn from one of you. And again, I'm very grateful for the opportunity, Thomas, to be here with you.
Absolutely. And thank you for the conversation. It's really interesting to take your story of where you went pre-pandemic with a big transformation, big goals in place, with a shock, a bigger shock than most. I mean, we've all been shocked, but truly in your case, and it's incredible to see how that's changed the corporate culture and the whole organization. And in some ways, it feels like you're ready for like what's next because of that, right? And so I thought it was really instructive to go through that story and that transformation, and then use that to think ahead of, you know, how there are similarities, but there are also things that are different, right? In terms of what may come up next. But the one way to look at AI is it's this big disruptor in the same way that COVID was. And maybe it's a bit of a slower burn. It's not top-down government policies that literally shuts down the business. But in some ways and through some angles, those are conversations that are happening, right? Within boards and within leadership teams. And that's it's within articles that people see and front page news, which is also impacting employee sentiment and the way they're approaching work. And I think some of the lessons you talked about around communicating transparently and even well beyond what is honestly really could be expected, right? If you're talking to ex-employees and really communicating with empathy and sharing what might come ahead. You're really leaving an opportunity over a long enough time horizon, right, for an amazing business impact. And the same thing, I think, probably holds true for folks who think about AI and enablement of that in their organizations going forward. So thank you once again for this incredible conversation, Diana. And for everyone who's out there, I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. And good luck as we all look to future-proof our organizations and the HR function itself, as we can all thrive within the age of AI. Signing off. See you all next time. Bye now. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's, again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.